The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, we don't want to steal any of John Steele and Stuart Smith's thunder here, but it was quite a big week in J3, wasn't it?
Yeah, very big week. It's been a long time coming. They've absolutely strolled to the title. But, yeah, congratulations to Blaublitz Akita. Just, yeah, dominated J3, barely conceded a goal. Yeah, fully deserving. And it'll be great to see them in J2 next year.
Absolutely, yes. Stuart did mention the title win for Akita in last week's second period of extra time. But, I bet he wishes he was a fly on the wall in the Akita celebrations, because after going however many games it was, I think it was 28, wasn't it, unbeaten to start the season and indeed wrapping up the title, they then went out in their next game and promptly lost for the first time all year.
Yeah, I imagine they very much enjoyed their celebrations, and I think you can probably forgive them one off day after sealing the title. But yeah, I think the people at Toyama will be very delighted to have got a slightly hungover Blaublitz Akita turning up to them.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. So yeah, Toyama become the first team to beat Akita this season at the 29th time of asking. And for more detail on that game, I'm sure, and again, a further celebration of Akita's title, tune in to the Extra Time Boys. Their episode dropping later this week, I'm sure. And also, we're talking about J3. We have a new club confirmed to be joining the league in 2021. And interestingly enough, they're completing the set of prefectures in Kyushu that now have a J-League club. Miyazaki have joined the party in the form of Tegevaharo, and again, I'm not quite sure on the pronunciation of that, but I'm sticking with it for the time being. So congratulations to them. I believe, they're guaranteed promotion as they've secured a top three finish in the JFL. So, some more new blood into the J-League is always welcome, Sam. And, Miyazaki, as I say, completing the set of Kyushu prefectures.
Yeah, I'm really happy that Miyazaki have come in. It'll now make it three J-League grounds that I've been to after a little trip to Miyazaki a few years ago. And, it's great to just get a new region in there. You want to, what are we down to, seven left now or something like that, without a team in the J-League? So, the sooner we finish that set, the better. So, great for Miyazaki. I think we've still got a chance of one more maybe being promoted on the final day. I think Iwaki and Mie and I think Verspa Oita are also just about in it. So it looks like a fascinating finish to the season in the JFL.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Unfortunately, we don't cover that league on this particular podcast, but maybe Stuart and John will be able to give it a little bit of attention towards the end of the season. But so huge news at the top of J3 with Akita confirming the title, and obviously with that promotion to J2 in 2021, and Miyazaki confirmed to be joining J3 next season. We thought, Sam, we were going to have a J1 title party as well this past weekend. That is because Kawasaki moved to within touching distance of their third top flight title in four seasons with a 3-1 home victory over Yokohama F. Marinos last Wednesday night at Todoroki, a pulsating Kanagawa derby, as they tend to be between these two clubs. And, Sam, did it basically come down to Yohei Takaoka's straight red card for handling outside the box in the 40th minute? Because up until then, obviously, Yokohama F. Marinos had given Kawasaki all they could handle. But it took until 8 minutes into the second half before Frontale broke the deadlock. F. Marinos hit back shortly after, but then, a late burst from Frontale saw them run out winners by two clear goals. But, did it really all for you hinge on that red card?
Well, it's always going to change a game, that red card. It's a definite red card. I think he's just left high and dry by his defence, really, and he handles outside the area. But, it was a very even game before that, a very feisty game. It was a very well-contested match. I really enjoyed it. But once Kawasaki get a man advantage, and then they bring on Oshima and Mitoma at half-time, that's a little unfair. And they were then the better side second half, but it wasn't like Yokohama were out of it. They're very good on the counter-attack, and they definitely held their own. They even got back into it with a Hatanaka header later in the game. So it was a very good game. I think maybe on the... Well, it's difficult to say how the game would have panned out without that red card, but it definitely, yeah, settled it. But I want to just talk about Kaoru Mitoma again. I know we mention him every week on this podcast, but his assist is one of the best assists I've ever seen. It's for the last goal. He picks the ball up on the edge of his own area. He flicks it past one defender. He then outstrips Watanabe down the left wing. He gets through to Thiago Martins. He pops it through his legs, and then he has the presence of mind at the end of it to square it for Kobayashi. It's a fantastic piece of work from Mitoma. If Gareth Bale had done this, we'd be seeing it all over the world. So I'm glad maybe we've just got the privilege just in watching the J-League to have seen it. It was fantastic goal. And I think if there was any doubt before, I think there isn't now that he's going to be the young MVP of the season.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. What an impact he's had. Yeah, scored to cover us like his first here, as I say, 8 minutes into the second half. And then, yeah, a simply stunning run to set up Kobayashi for the clincher in the 95th minute. And, yeah, absolutely stunning performance in from Mitoma. Yeah, again, after coming on at half-time. And, Sam, I've got to admit, I was obviously watching the FC Tokyo Sendai game, which, for the record, ended 2-2 with the Vegalta goal machine Shun Nagasawa netting yet again. I don't know what it was, but it just happened to be immaculate timing on my behalf, I think. With the two times I turned over to see what was happening in the Frontale F. Marino's game, well, the first time was in the 40th minute. I literally saw the ball popped over the top. I saw the indecision from Hatanaka, and I saw Takaoka dash out and, punch the ball while where he most definitely shouldn't have, when he was outside the box. And then I can't remember the exact minute it was, but I remember flicking over in the second half and seeing Frontale passing the ball around while Marcos Jr. was lying down on the floor. Frontale didn't put the ball out. And ultimately, I think that all ended with Kobayashi scoring from an offside position. But F. Marino's supporters might have had an argument for Frontale also going down to 10 men, because what was Junsung Ryong doing running up to midfield and then shoving Eric to the floor? That was really puzzling.
Yeah, I don't know. There'd been a bit of a running theme throughout the game. It was quite feisty, as I said before. I think there was a period, and there was a bit earlier in the game, I think it was a collision between Tiraton and Yamane, and Tiraton puts a headbutt in there. So, I mean, he was running a tightrope there. And then this one, I don't know. Erika doesn't do anything that I can see, and Jung just fancies getting involved, sprints to the halfway line, shoves him over. I think he's lucky that the referee didn't decide to go any further with that. It's definitely running the risk. I don't have a clue what's gone through his head, but there was definitely a battle between the Frontale players and particularly Eric and Marcos Jr. And it made for a fascinating game for a neutral, at least. Just, yeah, but who knows what was going through his head, but I think Kawasaki fans were pretty happy to see Eric pushed to the floor, and maybe Marinos fans not so much.
Yeah, that was a head-scratcher, but yeah, Jung was allowed to stay on the pitch and, yeah, saw out the game again. A 3-1 win to Frontale, which, as I said, put them to within touching distance of the title. Yeah, as I mentioned, also on Wednesday, Sendai 2, FC Tokyo 2, up at the Yurtech. Hosts Vegalta twice came from behind to earn a point. And in the other game, Kobe's farewell game before they headed off to Qatar for the ACL and indeed their final home game of the season, ended in defeat to Urawa Reds, with Martinez scoring for the second straight game, and again set up by Ryosuke Yamanaka, the winner there from Martinez coming in the 83rd minute. All right, well, so Sam, Frontale headed to Oita on Saturday then. We knew that, even a point would be enough with their massive goal difference advantage to, not quite mathematically, but yeah, basically seal the title. And, I don't know, in similar circumstances to Akita perhaps, although obviously Akita had already wrapped up the title in J3 before they laid their first egg of the season on the weekend. Did Frontale just fail to show up here against Trinita?
Yeah, a little bit of that and a little bit of Oita being fantastic, especially first half. Oita, at their best, are very good in possession. They will keep the ball forever. They're a difficult team to get it off. And this game, first half, and Naoki Nomura, I think, was the best player on the pitch, especially first half. But they kept the ball very well. They saw that there were gaps in that Frontale defence. When you take Jesse L out of it, or if you take Taniguchi out of it, there's a hole there. They have to put Kurumaya in there. He has to then definitely play on the left-hand side of the back line, so it's a little bit of a mess, and they took advantage of that. There were some good runs in behind from Kohei Issa, but yeah, Nomura was fantastic. He just he's not really played too much this season. He had a lot of injuries at the start of it, but he got on the ball, he was confident, he had quite a few chances before he eventually scores in this game. And for the large part of that first half, Kawasaki were indebted to Jung Seung Ryung, who bailed them out time and time again. I don't know if it was just the hangover from Kawasaki, or they just maybe took their foot off the gas, but they did not turn up first half. But as much as they didn't, I think you have to give full credit to Oita. They took full advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, they dominated the highlights, at least of the first half here. And obviously it took a deserved lead, although, there was there some controversy over the penalty and then the red card, Sam. There's no question that Frontale benefited from a cast iron straight red card for Takaoka last Wednesday. But, Kawasaki themselves were reduced to 10 men just past the half hour here away at Oita after Yamato Machida's angled ball over the top of Frontale captain Shogo Taniguchi was chested down by the previously mentioned very impressive Naoki Nomura as he surged into the area on the left. Taniguchi turned around and instinctively stuck out his hand and made contact with Nomura. It did appear to be very slight contact, but Nomura went to ground with the referee pointing to the spot and also showing Taniguchi a straight red card. I mean, I think for Taniguchi, it's one of those where you just can't help yourself and you, as I say, instinctively put your hand out to not necessarily to impede the forward, but yeah, to try and get your bearings, I guess, as you turn around. And unfortunately for Taniguchi, Nomura, I guess, was smart enough to go down, because oftentimes we see 50-50 penalty decisions that where the forward decides to stay on his feet, which we applaud. But I mean, if the foul is committed, then I guess that the forward is within his right to to make sure the referee notices it. So firstly, did you think it was a penalty? And then did you think the red card was merited? Or was that the triple punishment that we had heard was going to be, phased out or, not used as often?
Well, first, I think it is a little bit soft. I agree with you. It's just kind of Taniguchi gets caught under the ball, then it's just a reaction to turn round. But he makes contact. If Nomura doesn't go down, I don't think it's ever going to be given. So you would say it's clever from the Oita player. I think he's not going to get anything unless he goes down. There's just about enough contact. And once the referee gives that penalty, it's not for the triple punishment. Taniguchi has to be making a clear attempt for the ball. And he isn't in this case. He's just had a little bit of a tug on the arm. So once he gives the penalty, he has to give the red card. So I think Kawasaki will be slightly annoyed and think it's quite harsh. But I just about agree with the decision. I think he's caught out. It's a little bit of a reaction. Nomura makes as much of it as he can, which he's almost entitled to do, because the strikers are not helped by referees who won't give a penalty, even if a defender is all over him if he stays on his feet. So, yeah, I think Nomura earned it, and, yeah, I think it was a red card.
I agree. Yeah, I think the referee's got everything right. As long as, he's following the letter of the law there and not punishing Frontale too much by also giving the red card and obviously sending Taniguchi off. I don't know whether a yellow card is merited there or by the letter of the law he has to give a red. So, presumably he's followed all the right steps there. And, Taniguchi in therefore had to go. And Nomura himself stepped up and blasted home the spot kick under Jung's dive. Jung guessed the right way, but, was unable to get a finger fingertips on the ball. So, yeah, Oita took a deserved lead then, as we said, just past the half hour and indeed into the halftime break. Things got a little bit better from a Frontale perspective in the second half. Shun Takagi was forced to hold on to a low drive from Kyohei Noborizato in the 69th minute. And late on, Hidemasa Morita fizzed a first-time shot from the edge of the box just over the bar. And indeed, there was almost an Oita own goal in stoppage time as Kawasaki tried to work their way into a shooting opportunity. The ball pinballed around and ended up going off a Trinita defender and just wide of the post. But ultimately, Oita then ran out 1-0 victors. I guess you could put this down as one of the shocks of the season. It doesn't qualify as the biggest, I don't think, Sam. Obviously, last week's episode talking about Sendai heading to Gumba, having not won in 17 games and beating the second place team 4-0. I think that has taken the cake for the biggest shock of the season, and basically I don't think it'll be bettered until the end of the season. But yeah, with Frontale rolling again, especially after the win on Wednesday, we expected them to handle their business down in Oita. But you're right to say, Sam, that Oita deserve massive credit for this victory, and well done to Trinita, and Frontale will look to seal the title in front of their home fans at Todoroki on Wednesday night, and we will talk about that game and their opponents very shortly. Their opponents are, of course, Gumba Osaka, who are second in the table. Frontale would have still been crowned champions despite their loss at Oita on Saturday if Gumba failed to win away at Urawa in the only game played on Sunday. But yeah, seeing as though we haven't led the episode with congratulations for Kawasaki, you can probably gather that Gumba held up their end of the bargain, and they came from behind to do it, winning 2-1 at the Saitama Stadium. Sam, I'm not quite sure of this game. You'll have to fill me in, presuming that you've watched the entire thing, because according to the J-League the data site, Reds have only had 6 shots in the entire game, but the DAZN highlights package was dominated by Reds' chances. So I'm not sure whether they've shown in the entirety of Urawa's shots, because it looked to me from the highlights package that Reds were, for the large part of this game, the better team, at least in terms of the chances they were creating. I guess according to the highlights package that I've seen, Tomoaki Makino put them ahead and indeed into a deserved lead in the 62nd minute. But from there, Gumba turned the game on its head. So was this a deserved 3 points for Gumba, or did they ride their luck in coming from behind?
I'm trying to remember the highlights package and if it was every shot that Urawa had. And it might have been. First half, very little happens, except there are a couple of refereeing decisions that could go either way. There's a Makino handball that I have to admit I haven't seen, but I've heard that a lot of people have seen it, and I couldn't find it when I went back through the game, but there's an argument for a penalty apparently there for Gamba. Then I think it's in the 10th minute, there's a ball through to Kuroki, and Kim makes the tackle. He gets nowhere near the ball.
Yeah.
It does look like it, I think, first glance, and you can tell why the referee thinks that he's got the ball because of the way the ball does travel, but he doesn't get it. So that would have been a red card for Kim. So Gamba got away with that there. But in terms of chances first half, there's not a lot. I think Higashiguchi made one save from Kuroki. I think there was a fairly comfortable save, I think, from an Osami shot. But otherwise, not a lot happened in terms of goal mouth action. Urawa, I think where they're going to get all their highlights from is at the start of this second half, where they came out of the blocks very well. There was a good strike from Nagasawa off the crossbar, then Leonardo hit the post. So they were on top for that period, but I think it was only a short period of maybe 15 minutes, so I think the highlights make it look more like a dominant Urawa performance than maybe it was. I think the game was pretty even, and Gamba just took their chances more than Urawa did.
Fair enough then. All right, well, apologies to any Gumba supporters who might have think that I've shortchanged their victory here. But if you haven't seen it yourself, Gumba fans, yeah, check out the DAZN highlights package because it looks like Reds totally bossed this game. But yeah, so after Makino had put Reds in front in the 62nd minute, that came after Thomas Deng had headed a deep cross from Ryosuke Yamanaka back across goal.
Can I get a quick segue in there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Thomas Deng, we forgot the poll.
Of course,
for the,
yes.
Got goal of the season. Thomas Deng, he held off very stiff competition from Mitsuki Saito, winning 53.6% to 46.4%. So Thomas Deng's great assist here, and his goal is still the front runner in the goal of the season competition.
Terrific, terrific. Okay, well, yeah, I can now reveal that exclusively that I voted for Deng. So, yeah, he had my vote, and so I'm pleased to have, played my part in keeping him in the clubhouse lead. And thanks for mentioning that, Sam. I'd actually forgotten when the poll had ended. So, glad to know about that. And actually, I don't know, we might have to confer later on. There might be a new candidate for your next poll to go up against Deng. We'll talk about that after our break. So Reds ahead in the 62nd minute, but just 4 minutes later, Takashi Usami drove home from 12 yards after Yuya Fukuda's shot was blocked into his path. A quick first touch to get the ball out of his feet from Usami, and his second flew through Makino's legs and well out of the reach of Shusaku Nishikawa. Then 10 minutes from time, Agumba took the lead when defender Ryu Takao headed in a corner for his first J1 goal. So, Gumba well and truly bouncing back from that disappointing home loss against Sendai last time out. And, coupled with Frontale's loss to Trinidad the day before, the title is technically still up for grabs, although, Frontale are 14 points ahead and just the small matter of 41 goals of goal difference, as well as these two clubs get set to face off at Todoroki on Wednesday night. Then Sam, of course, you probably remember, some of the listeners will as well, Frontale won the first meeting of the season 1-0 at the Panasonic Stadium Suite, thanks to a superb goal from Sam's boyfriend Ryota Oshima. Frontale will be hoping for more of the same from Oshima on Wednesday night. It's the top two teams in the league facing off, Sam, so anything is possible, but you would I don't want to put words in your mouth, I would expect Frontale to bounce back and put in their best performance after laying an egg away at Oita, but Gumba have proven to be a tough nut to crack for all teams except Sendai in the last two or three months. So what are you expecting at Todoroki on Wednesday night?
I would expect a reaction from Kawasaki in front of their home fans. I think that's how they'd want to win it. They wouldn't want to have won the title necessarily off the back of a loss and just relied on a draw for Gamba or something like that. So I think they'll be very up for it. I think Gamba, they took a bit of a battering in this game in terms of personnel they lost. Idaguchi had already missed out through injury. Then Onose, I think, goes off injured. Fujiharu, I think he's got strapping on his leg. So they're a little bit of the walking wounded at times in this game, Gamba. So they might not relish a trip to Todoroki 3 days later. So I would expect the title to be sealed, but then I expected it against Oita. And I remember what league this is. I think they'll try and drag it out for as long as possible. But realistically, Kawasaki should do enough on Wednesday to win the title.
Yeah, I concur there, but the games have got to be played, and it should be fascinating at Todoroki, and we very much look forward to it. All right, well, so those are the results from the top two over the weekend in match day 28. We'll take a quick break now, and then we'll round up the other five games that were played on Saturday, including a look at the race for the top three spots in the league that qualify obviously for the Asian Champions League. And later on, towards the end of the episode, we'll be debuting a new feature that will run until the end of the season. So, stay tuned for that. But, we'll be back in just a sec. Welcome back. Next, let's head to the Toyota Stadium in Aichi Prefecture, the home of Nagoya Grampus. Of course, Grampus have pretty horrible memories of home fixtures against Shonan Bellmare in the last few years, but they put some ghosts. They laid some ghosts to rest on Saturday with a 3-1 home victory over visiting Bellmare. And, Sam, what a simply stunning way to take the lead in the 11th minute when Mateus, their man of the moment and very much their talisman this season, ran on to a loose pass in midfield from Shonan forward Hiroto Nakagawa and from 35 yards sent an absolute laser beam on target that a perplexed Bellmare keeper Kosei Tani could only help into the net. Certainly not the best goalkeeping you've ever seen, but the audacity to have a pop from 35 yards reaped its rewards for Mateus. And this was the goal I'd teased earlier on, Sam, that I wonder whether it deserves a shot at a poll for goal of the season versus Thomas Deng.
Well, I think it's a fantastic strike from Mateus. As you said, there aren't many players in the league that would even try it from there, and he hits it superbly well. I think maybe on first look, as I think you mentioned in the green room, that it looks like a fantastic strike and it's going to be a goal of the season contender. But looking at it, and Tani, I think, gets two hands to it. It goes through them. I think the goalkeeper really should save it. So I think that, for me, takes it out of the really top goals of the season. So I think, in my opinion anyway, I think Thomas Deng is safe for another week.
Yeah, I agree. At the end of the day, disappointing from Tani, really, but you have to applaud the audacity of having a crack there from Mateus. Brilliant stuff, and Grampus ahead early here. But 6 minutes after Mateus's goal, Shonan were level when defender Keisuke Saka's header found the net via the fingertips of Nagoya keeper Mitch Langerak. Langerak's touch actually caused the ball to arc over Shinosuke Nakatani, who was stationed on the line and attempted to clear, but he was unable to as the ball just sailed over his head. A bit of a leaping salmon there from a Nakatani, but unable to make contact and keep the ball out. But then, two goals in 5 minutes early in the second half sent to Grampus cruising to victory. At first, Hiroyuki Abe drove home a low shot from inside the D. Then Gabriel Xavier celebrated the birth of his child the previous day by volleying home superbly from a deft Mateus cross in the 56th minute. So, Mateus, everything he touches these days turns to gold. And Xavier celebrating a massive moment in his life with a terrific goal as well to wrap up the 3 points for Grampus. So, ghosts laid to rest, Sam, and ultimately a comfortable home win for Nagoya over Bellmare.
Yeah, very much ghosts to rest, because Shonan are a difficult side for Nagoya all the time. They've relegated them a couple of times. And earlier in this season, I think Nagoya did win against Shonan 1-0, but it wasn't an easy game. It took a 90th minute goal, I think, from Mateus on that day as well. But this was a really good performance. I worried, that after Kanazaki was injured and Yamasaki's injured, do they definitely have enough goals in them without the proper striker? But they laid those questions to rest here. The three goals are all of top quality. I really liked Gabriel Xavier's goal. I thought the technique on that is fantastic. He's just such a classy player to watch. I really enjoy Gabriel Xavier's work. And Nagoya, after the blow of going being pegged back, and it was a bit of a messy equaliser from Shonan. And Nagoya teams in the past might have just folded at that point or just really struggled, but they were fantastic. The two goals in the second half, very well taken. And Nagoya back to looking like a real threat for these ACL places. And I'm surprised with how much I have enjoyed watching a Massimo Ficcadenti team this season. So full credit to him and the players.
Yeah, chugging along pretty well at the moment. Grampus in third spot in the table, and they're ready to pounce on any Gumba Osaka slip-ups, say, for example, on Wednesday night at Todoroki. Although it has to be said that, Grampus are not in action this midweek. They've played a game more than Gumba, so, they'll just be hoping that Gumba don't move any further ahead of them in midweek. It finished 3-1 at the Toyota Stadium then. It also did finish 3-1 up at the Yurtec Stadium in Sendai for ACL chasing Kashima's visit to Vegalta. And, Antlers returned home with all 3 points. Quite a short trip back down to Ibaraki from Miyagi Prefecture. And, Kashima's 3-1 win has sent them up to fourth in the table after 3 goals in 15 minutes early in the second half sent them on their way. Everaldo had gone close on a couple of occasions in the first half, during one, the superb save from Jakub Slowik early on, but he was not to be denied in the 47th minute, brilliantly heading in a Juan Alano cross into the top corner. And up the other end, Yuya Oki saved well from a Yasuhiro Hiraoka header to prevent Sendai from equalising almost instantly. Then in the blink of an eye, it was 3-0 after Alano drove home inside Slovic's right-hand post, and ISA Wada strode onto a lovely cross from Everaldo to finish off an end-to-end Antlers move. Of course, the Vegalta goal machine, Shun Nagasawa, was not to be denied. He had to come off the bench at half-time and pulled a goal back for Vegalta with 15 minutes left with a trademark glancing header from a Koji Hachizuka cross. But yes, the Antlers saw the game out to move up to fourth, as I said, above both Cerezo Osaka, who we're coming on to next, and to FC Tokyo, who are over in Qatar. So, 3 points that Antlers had to have, Sam, if they're going to continue their push for the ACL. And with the Sendai in decent form recently, this is a hugely creditable victory, I think, for Antlers. They definitely rose to the occasion and scored some terrific goals to boot.
Yeah, Antlers were magnificent in this game. As you said, Vegalta were in really good form this week, at least. They're full of confidence. But Kashima, from the first whistle, they just dominated this game. The first half was another episode of Jakub Slovic versus the world, where he just saved time and time again. I mean, that's, as you mentioned, the header from Everaldo that he saves is a terrific save. He's going the wrong way to start with and has to adjust his weight. He gets down. It's a fantastic save. And it took something pretty special, I thought, to actually beat him, because this Everaldo header, I mean, he leaps magnificently and he places it right in the top corner. There's no chance for any goalkeeper, even one in Slovic's form. But Kashima, I just thought, again, they've just come into their own as this season's gone on. They've got this new front four, which is so interchangeable, where it's got Everaldo sort of starts on the left, and it's just in a position where nobody wants to mark him, because the right back is never going to be able to beat Everaldo in the air. So he has that advantage, but then he just slides across the front line. Ueda has come into the team the last few weeks. His movement is really good off him. And then he can come deep, as he did for the Alano goal, where he gets the flick on. Alano also comes in off the right. And then your boyfriend, Shoma Doi, is there, who didn't really get much of a look in. But he still is a terrific player to have in and around that front four. So they just looked very, very good in this game. I will give more credit to Shun Nagasawa. I thought his header was very good for 3-1. It's... Sendai haven't played to him necessarily all season, where if you have him, you have to plop crosses into the box. And for a long time this season, they hadn't. And they are starting to use him now. It's a good flicked header. I can't say anything other than that. But on the day, Kashima were much the better side than Sendai. 3-1, I think, still flatters Sendai on this performance. And Kashima, for me, they're fourth at the moment, I think. The way they're going, I'm pretty confident that Kashima will seal an ACL spot.
Yeah, well, we've 4 games to go, and we're going to go through some of the fixtures that these clubs in the ACL hunt have left to play. And listeners, when you hear Kashima's, you're probably not going to believe your ears. But all right, before we do that, we have to talk about Cerezo Osaka, whose ACL hopes were hit hard by a 1-0 home defeat to Hiroshima, for whom Leandro Pereira certainly had an eventful hour or so on the pitch. Firstly, he drove home a superb low shot to give Sanfrecce a 24th minute lead, but then after fouling Hiroaki Okuno in midfield in the 62nd minute, he kicked the ball away and was shown a second yellow card by a particularly pedantic, but ultimately, I guess, correct referee. Because, you shouldn't be doing that. And it's not up to the referee to referee the context of whether he's already got a yellow card or not. He shouldn't be kicking the ball away. He did, and although it's the softest red card you've ever seen in your life, ultimately, I guess, at the end of the day, the referee has no real option there, does he, Sam? I mean, I guess he could show a little bit of compassion, but yeah, if it was any other player who hadn't been booked, it would have been a yellow card, so Pereira's only got himself to blame at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's just stupid. I think, I don't know what you're doing. 0-0, why are you kicking the ball away like that? It was a foul. I don't know what he had to complain about. It wasn't going to get a booking. I don't know why he was so angry to kick the ball away. It's just, he left his team in the lurch there. They were 1-0 up at the time with a lot of game to play. So, yeah, really stupid from Pereira and unnecessary because he'd had a decent game. His goal was very well taken and he's had a pretty decent season this year. So, yeah, it just tarnished it a little bit there, a stupid second yellow. Maybe you could argue that the referee should have just, had a little bit of common sense just to give him, had a word with him. But, yeah, you have to book him. That's the letter of the law. And, he had to go. Just silly from Leandro Pereira.
Indeed. So with a man advantage for the last half hour, Cerezo obviously pushed for an equaliser. Tatsuhiro Sakamoto and Toshiyuki Takagi both hit the bar with shots in the last 15 minutes or so. And Cerezo captain Hiroshi Kiyotake fired over from a close range shortly after Sakamoto's shot. But ultimately it was not Cerezo's day. And Hiroshima left the city of Osaka very happy with their 3 points. Hiroshi Jofuku very animated in his celebrations at the full-time whistle, and fair enough too. A backs-to-the-wall win ultimately with playing with 10 men for the last half hour. So kudos to Hiroshima. And again, I guess at the end we can debate whether Cerezo actually want to be in the ACL or not, Sam, on how seriously they've taken it in the past. But there's no doubt that their ACL hopes were definitely knocked by this result.
Yeah, they're in quite a little bit of a rut. I don't know if they just want to avoid it, but yeah, they're trying to shoot themselves in the foot a little bit, I think. They've announced that Lotina is going to leave at the end of the season, which seems really terrible timing to announce that. I mean, you've still got ACL places to go for. Still had a potential to get into the Emperor's Cup, so I don't really know why that's been announced. I don't know if it's a distraction for the players, but otherwise, it's not working for them. They rely so heavily on Sakamoto and Kiyotake, and when those two don't produce anything, nobody else is stepping up in this team. And they had so long against 10 men of Sanfrecce, and they had a couple of chances, but there wasn't anything I would say that was clear cut or where Sanfrecce were desperate at all. So maybe you give credit to Sanfrecce. They're well organised. If any team is going to defend the 1-0 lead with 10 men, it's probably going to be them. But yeah, just it's not good enough for Cerezo, and they're going backwards. I know they've still got 2 games in hand, so they need to, and they've got the players to do it, but at the moment they're only going one way and it's not a positive way.
No, most definitely. All right, so let's take stock then of the battle for the ACL places, and indeed the battle for second. Yeah, because second place gets you an Emperor's Cup semi-final berth, of course. So that is well and truly a carrot for a number of clubs as we approach the stretch run of the season. So yeah, let's have a look at the teams in second down to sixth and where they stand and what they've got left to play in this J1 season. So Gamba have 58 points. In second spot in the table, and a goal difference of plus 8. They have 5 games left to play, including, of course, Wednesday's trip to champions-elect Kawasaki. After that, they host Tosu, then visit Shonan and Yokohama FC before hosting Shimizu on the final day of the season. So once they've got the trip to Todoroki out of the way, Sam, they've obviously got 2 more trips to Kanagawa to come, but none of those 4 games left to play after Frontale will fill them with too much fear, I wouldn't have said.
No, you'd look at that as a Gamba supporter, and you'd probably expect 12 points from those games after the Kawasaki one. I mean, you can't take anything for granted, as we saw against Vegalta Sendai, but really, you couldn't ask, I don't think, for much better fixtures if you're Gamba. So, yeah, they should be full of confidence and have got to be clear favourites for at least the ACL spots for first and probably the second place as well.
Indeed. So, what makes it really, really interesting, though, is the 2 teams immediately below Gamba. Gamba do have a decent points advantage over both of them. Nagoya are 3rd with 55 points, so 3 points behind Gamba, though Grampus do have a much better goal difference and have played a game more. Now, they're not in action, as I mentioned, on Wednesday night, Grampus, but they do have 3 of their final 4 games at home, and again, similar to Gamba, all 4 look eminently winnable for Grampus. They host Oita and then visit Kashiwa, their final away game of the season, before finishing the season at home against Yokohama FC and against Hiroshima. So, again, Sam, Nagoya, in the form they're in, if they can carry on the way they did against Shonan on Saturday, then that fixture list, again, doesn't fill you with too many fears, does it?
Not too many. I think Oita and Hiroshima are teams that are difficult to break down if they're in the mood. So I think they're slightly more difficult fixtures than maybe where Gamba have got Shimizu, who are quite an open team. So you're always going to get chances against them. Shonan are pretty open as well. So I think that's where it benefits Gamba. But yeah, Nagoya will look at those fixtures. They'll expect to probably win all of them. Kashiwa on their day, very good team. So you know, yeah, maybe that's the most difficult fixture of all, both of their fixtures at the moment. But yeah, you'd expect Nagoya to win those. But I mean, it's the J League; it doesn't necessarily matter what the fixtures are. But yeah, looking at those, you'd say 10 points. I think Nagoya, I'd give them out of those fixtures.
All right, so advantage of Gamba so far, at least in the race for second. But now it gets really, really interesting because fourth place Kashima have 4 games left to play. They're on 52 points, 6 points behind Gamba. And as well as Nagoya, they've also played a game more than Gamba. But all 4 of Antlers' remaining fixtures will all be played at home. They have to face Kashiwa, Urawa, Shimizu and Cerezo Osaka in their final 4 games of the season, and they're all at home, Sam. A remarkable turn of events. It's a quirk of the fixture list because, obviously, late on, Antlers were scheduled to face some of the ACL teams, but those games had to be brought forward with, obviously, the ACL's, moving schedule. And so that massive quirk of fixturing has meant that Antlers don't have to travel for the remainder of the season.
That's very handy. I think they'll be delighted whether they've got to work that out. Yeah, I think they're probably in the best form of anyone that going into this race. I think they've got very winnable fixtures. No team there is into particularly good form that they've got to face. Nobody likes visiting Kashima, especially now that you can get a big crowd in there at 50%. So yeah, I think they'll be licking their lips at that fixture list. And yeah, you can't want anything more than 4 home games to end a season.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? All right, well, in fifth place, the FC Tokyo, who, of course, were overtaken by Antlers on Saturday. Tokyo have 51 points but have played 32 games, so they're well and truly out of the race for second spot. That is mathematically impossible. And, the ACL places, which, of course, could go down to fourth in the table if one of the top 2 in J1 wins the Emperor's Cup. That will mean that fourth place in J1 also qualifies for the ACL playoffs. But, that looks out of reach for Tokyo as well. Sixth place, Cerezo, who we just mentioned, lost to Hiroshima on Saturday and, are kind of sputtering towards the finish line. Well, they do have 6 games left left to play, so have two games in hand on Nagoya and Kashima above them, and indeed one on their city rivals Gamba. But on 49 points, are a full 9 points behind Gamba now, with their games to play: away at Oita, then home Yokohama FC, away Sapporo, home Kashiwa, and home Tosu before they finish away at Kashima, as we just mentioned. We obviously can't write Cerezo off, Sam, at least for the race for fourth in the table, with their remaining fixtures obviously having games in hand on teams above them. But at this stage, you'd be a brave man to put any money down on Cerezo finishing in the top four.
Yeah, if you gave me this set of fixtures maybe a month or two ago, I think you'd put Cerezo. Ooh, they've got a really good chance. I think they should look to be able to beat Oita and Yokohama. Sapporo are a team that depends what sort of team you get on the day. But again, you should look to win that. And yeah, Kashua and Tosu are, again, beatable teams. So they've got the fixtures there to take that right into the last game against Kashua if they... But they've just got to turn around and turn up on... I assume they play Wednesday against Oita?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so if that's a massive game for them. They have to get back on the horse, back into winning ways. So, yeah, it makes that very interesting fixture, because they win that, get some confidence. They've got the fixture to take this deep. So, I mean, as a neutral, I'm pretty rooting for Cerezo Osaka against Oita. So, sorry to any Oita fans.
Yeah. So, a lot to lot of water to go under, a lot of bridges before we wrap up this season. The Chaos Energy J-League season of all time, of course. But, there's plenty to play for in the race, firstly for second, then, the other ACL spots as well. So you're looking forward to how it's all going to pan out in the last month or so of the season. We've got two more games to wrap up from match day 28 before we launch into our new feature, and then look to, what's coming up in the next week or so in Japanese football. So let's briefly give Tosu their props, Sam, for a highly creditable 2-1 away win over Kashiwa Reysol on Saturday. After a goalless first half, Tosu's man of the hour, Daichi Hayashi, gave them the lead 8 minutes after the break, steering home a volley from 12 yards after Yuta Higuchi had pounced on a loose pass from Kashiwa keeper Kim Sung-gyu. In the 66th minute, Tosu substitute Fuchi Honda swept in on the turn after his cheeky flick had come back to him off Reysol defender Takuma Ominami. There were some complaints from the Reysol players that the ball might have hit Honda's hand before he swept home. But then, poor old Tomoya Koyamatsu, Sam, how he didn't score on this day is completely beyond me. Kim was absolutely inspired, at least when it came to saving shots from Koyamatsu. And basically, Kim kept Reysol in the game. They were 2-0 down, but they were at least still in with a sniff, and Koyamatsu could have had a hat-trick on another day, but it was not to be. And then, Reysol set up a grandstand finish when their Kenyan superstar Michael Olunga steered home from a yard out after Hiroto Goya had flicked on across from the right. But, despite that late Olunga goal and late pressure from Reysol, they couldn't conjure an equaliser, and Tosu's excellent unbeaten run continues, Sam.
Yeah, I thought they played very well, Tosu. I thought they could have had a lot more goals, as you said, Kim. I think he was trying to make up for his mistake with the saves he was making from Koyamatsu, who was this week's Noriaki Fujimoto. Tosu got a little bit of luck. Obviously, the first goal is luck, where Kim just passes it away straight to them. The second goal is handball, I think, from Honda. It shouldn't be allowed. So a little bit of luck, but you make your own luck. They were the better team for much of this game. Kashiwa probably a little undercooked. They only returned to training in midweek. They haven't. You can't really do too much in terms of... It's not the same when you're training from home individually to keep your fitness and that sort of thing. So maybe that goes against them a little bit. But Tosu were on it from minute one. They were pressing high. That's gets them the goal. The first one is just the high press on the Kashua backline, which is susceptible, and sometimes Kim can be with a few lapses of concentration when passing it out. So I thought, yeah, Tosa were very good. Kashua didn't create too much. Alunga was, he had one chance where he won the ball back himself and then went in on goal but shot into the side netting, but otherwise he was kept fairly quiet. I didn't see a lot of Cristiano in this game. Osaka got subbed off quite early, so yeah, Kashua weren't really on it. And before the game, they had a lot of games in hand. They were sitting in mid-table, but a good run could have pushed them into the ACL spots. But I think this loss has probably ended any hope that they had of staging a late fight back. But yeah, they just ran into a Tosu team that were the better team on the day. And so yeah, full credit to them.
Yeah, terrific stuff from Tosu. Seven games unbeaten, and they actually moved up a spot in the table to 14th above Yokohama FC. So yeah, well done. Ultimately, a fully deserved victory for Sagan away at Kashua. And so we'll move on to the final game of the match day, and it was the one that featured the most goals up at the Sapporo Dome. Visiting Shimizu took a very early lead through Hwang Seok Ho's excellent shot from just outside the box. At that stage of proceedings, very early on, of course, new S-Pulse manager Hiroaki Hiraoka must have just been thinking, yeah, this managing lark is just a walk in the park. He'd, of course, won his first two games in charge after taking over from Peter Klimovsky. But, for Sapporo, firstly, they had the unfortunate incident of losing Takuma Arano to injury in the 10th minute. But the man who replaced him, Anderson Lopez, turned this game on its head before half-time. Firstly, he equalised from the penalty spot in the 17th minute, and then to put Consadole ahead to stay 9 minutes before half time with a volleyed finish from close range. Kim Min-tae then blasted home 4 minutes later to give Sapporo a two-goal buffer at half-time, a 3-1 to Consadole at the break. Then just past the hour, friend of the podcast, Jay Bothroyd, continued his excellent recent form by firing in on the half-volley, and Consadole saved the best till last, with Akito Fukumori curling in a brilliant free kick to the far post in the 73rd minute to seal a thumping 5-1 win. So a bit of a reality check for Hiraoka and his S-Pulse boys, Sam. But ultimately Sapporo gave the punters at the Sapporo Dome a thoroughly entertaining Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, the new manager bounce is well and truly over for Shimizu. Yeah. I didn't think they necessarily played that badly in this game to lose 5-1. I think it was a little bit of a harsh scoreline on them, but I think you've got to give a lot of credit to the finishing from Sapporo, which has kind of been lacking all season since Suzuki left, but they took their chances terrifically here. I just want to say all the best to Takuma Arano. I mean, his ankle was at various degrees of, various angles, and when he got tackled, it was a very poor tackle from Renato Augusto, from behind. I don't think he even got a booking for it. I think it was a really poor tackle. He has apologised on Twitter, which was nice to see, and all the best for a quick recovery for Arana, because it looked a horrible injury. But Anderson Lopez, he came on, he scored his penalty, he was involved in a lot of things there. And they also brought on Hugo Vieira, the new signing. He'd scored a lot of goals at Yokohama a couple of years ago, and I think he's just kind of an out-and-out striker, so he's going to get goals. So once he develops an understanding with Anderson Lopez or with Bothroyd, and you've got a good contingent of strikers there, so hopefully he does enough in this. I think he's got like a 2-month contract to kind of prove his worth, so hopefully he does so. And they've got, that's a good trio for next season, assuming Bothroyd continues there. But yeah, the goal is just fantastic. I really liked the Bothroyd goal, where the ball through from Fukumori and Lucas Fernandez doesn't give up on it, perfectly hooked back, and a great technique on the goal. And then what more can you say about Akito Fukumori? I think the best set piece taker in the league at the moment, and this free kick was another sublime effort. I mean, yeah, he's a joy to watch, and I don't know, he's just kind of confused at Umeda in goal. He sent him, I don't know where he was going for it, but yeah, terrific strike from Fukumori.
Yeah, a thoroughly entertaining afternoon for the punters at the Sapporo Dome, as we mentioned. All right, well, the Shimizu will feature very shortly in our new feature on the podcast that's going to run until the end of the J1 season. Well, hopefully, I should say, provided that I remember to include it on the rundown every week from now until the end of the season. What we're going to do is we're going to work up from the foot of the table to the top, and in each week's episode, we're going to run the rule over three or four clubs and pick their player of the season. Obviously, with the first three teams we're going to go through today, bottom club Sendai, second from bottom Shimizu, and a 16th place to Shonan, they all have a number of games left to play this season. So we could be accused of going too early on picking these teams as players of the season. But, Sam, in some instances, we did struggle to put the three names together, didn't we, for a short list. So I think it probably doesn't really matter that much on when we decide to go through each particular club. And if one player takes the player of the season nod by the scruff of the neck, then we might have to address it in a later episode. And we might have to do that with the first club that we're going to talk about. It's a Vegalta Sendai. You pushed very, very hard for Fushun Nagasawa to be included in our three-man shortlist, and regular listeners will know that I'm lying through my teeth when I say that. But I think it was we can agree, Sam, it was particularly difficult to put a three-man shortlist together for Vegalta, wasn't it? Because they have obviously struggled mightily all season. At the end of the day, I think we're going to be unanimous in our decision. But let's just run through the three names and the reasons why they were chosen.
Yeah, it was very difficult with Sendai, not only because they've not really played well all season, but their squad has been decimated by injuries all year round. I mean, their best players are probably, you'd say, Isaac Cuenca and Guedes and Nishimura, but none of them have really had too long a run in this team. So, yeah, I pushed for Guedes over Shun Nagasawa just because he's a much better player than Nagasawa. But I think we've just kind of had to include players. Almost, I don't want to say by default, but it's been difficult to pick anyone that's had a consistent run. So the three I think we've landed on in the end, I've pushed for Guedes, but I'll accept Nagasawa. He's had a very good week, and Sendai haven't really had much more than a good week all season, so I'll allow Nagasawa into this. Gritted teeth. The other one, next one, we've got Kei Ishihashi in midfield. He's kind of been the one holding everything together in midfield as everyone else falls around him with injuries. He's had to guide Takuma Hamasaki through. He's been his midfield partner for much of the season. He's a converted right back, and Ishihashi has just had to do all the workload in there. He's trying to do a bit of everything. He's a holding midfielder and by trade. He's as a ball winner, he's pretty decent. I wouldn't say he's up there, but I think his level is a little bit above Sendai. So hopefully he's impressed this season and can maybe move on to bigger and better things. But then I don't know if it needs much debate, but I think Jakub Slovic, the other one, I think he's quite clearly been the best player for Sendai. So many games this season, he's had to deny teams on his own. I mean, he's been this first half against Kashima was just the latest example of Slovic having to save everyone. He's been left totally exposed all season, and full credit to him for the performances that he's managed to put in and the consistency of those performances.
Yeah, there's no question that, Slovic takes it. Ishihashi is kind of in there by default. As you say, Sam, he's kind of been their midfield anchor, but he's basically the player who's appeared the most this season. And, he's tried to hold everything together in there. 28 appearances out of the 29 games that Sendai have played is many more than any other player in terms of starts. Anyway, he started every game but two. Guedes or Shun Nagasawa, you can pick your poison, really. I mean, Guedes has five goals on the season, and I mean, before last week, Nagasawa only had three all year until he scored five in the last three games. So over the course of the whole season, Guedes has probably been more important to Sendai, and we could be accused accused of recency bias if we throw Nagasawa in there, even though you're so desperate to, Sam. I know. But, yeah, Slovic obviously takes it. We've mentioned it numerous times throughout the season, a one-man battle against opposing attacks. I mean, just look at some of his highlights from Saturday against Antlers. Yeah, that early save off Everaldo is absolutely stunning. And, he's done his best to try and keep Sendai in games. And, obviously he's celebrated clean sheets like he's won the World Cup because, they're hugely hugely difficult to come by this season for a Sendai defence that has been pretty ordinary in front of him. So it's 22 games and 4 clean sheets for Slovic. Not the best figures, of course, but, yes, you have to take the defence in front of him into account, and he is unanimously our player of the season for Vegalta Sendai. Again, with Shimizu S-Pulse, the 17th in the table, Sam, it's obviously they've had a very rough season, so it's oftentimes it's difficult to scratch together 3 names. In this case, we've gone for Kenta Nishizawa, their creator in chief. Centre back Valdo has 4 goals in his 24 appearances, and Carlinhos, the much ballyhooed new striker at the start of the season, well, ultimately he has failed to deliver on what was expected of him in terms of consistent goal scoring, but he does have 8 goals in his 24 starts, so just about deserves a spot. Are there any players that are unlucky to miss out here, Sam? And ultimately, who's your pick here from S-Pulse? Who's their player of the season?
I mean, to be honest, looking at the rest of the squad, I don't think anyone else can consider themselves unlucky. There's not been many consistent performers all season for them. I know they've had to adapt to a new system for much of the season, one that a lot of them were quite uncomfortable with and they didn't really take to. So I do feel for them in that respect. They had a lot of injuries. You might have thought Hideki Ishige may have been involved in this because he started at fullback under Klimovsky for the first couple of games in the Levain Cup before the break, and then he got injured. So they've missed a couple of them, but yeah, I just can't look beyond the 3 that we've picked. I agree with you. I think Carlinhos has been a little bit disappointing, but he's been the only sort of regular goal threat that Shimizu have had. He's misses a few too many chances for my liking, but he's definitely one there. He's definitely, you can tell that he's got a little bit more class than a lot of the attacking options that they do have. I think Nishizawa, I think, plays best when he's playing as a winger. So he had a decent start to the season. He's ending the season quite well. There was that period in the middle where they switched to 3 at the back and he was operating as a wing back. I don't think he was quite as comfortable there, but in terms of just pure talent and technique, I think he's right up there. He's a very exciting player on the wing. So, yeah, I think next season, like last season, he was very good. And I think next season, if they stick to this way of playing, could be a very big season for him. And then Valdo, I think, is like the most noticeable player when you watch Shimizu. He's involved in everything. He's very enigmatic. He's very, with lots of gestures everywhere. He's involved in arguments with the referee. He's very good in the opposition's penalty area. As you mentioned, the goals he scored. Yeah, he's very difficult to mark off there. I think he's the best defender that they have as well. I don't think he's perfect, but yeah, he's tried to galvanize that team and keep it together at the back. So yeah, I think that we've picked the best 3. I mean, it's difficult though to pick one out of them. I think I'd probably still go Carlinhos, even though I've been disappointed with him. But, yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know. What's your opinion?
Well, yeah, again, the recency bias is probably weighing on my thoughts. But I was thinking about giving it to Nishizawa, but it's probably mainly for that one game recently where he had the hat-trick of assists against Kobe in the 3-1 home win. So, ultimately, at the end of the day, Sam, I have to trust in you because, yeah, you see Shimizu a lot more than I do. I see them on a 6 or 7 minute highlights package every week unless they're playing against the FC Tokyo. So in those sort of packages, obviously a player like Nishizawa will stand out, and I guess Valdo, when he heads in a Nishizawa free kick or a corner, will stand out as well. But if you want to plump for Carlinhos, then I'm more than happy to run with that, and we can put our pith helmets on and be braced for a belting in the comments. But I think we'll make it official. The J Talk Player of the Season for Fushimizu Espoirs is Carlinhos.
Yeah, I'm not particularly delighted with the pick, to be honest. I don't think he's played as well as he should have done. But yeah, I just think Nishizawa, not as consistent, I don't think. That period throughout the middle of the season where he didn't necessarily contribute too much. And Valdo, you can't put a defender in for Shimizu as their best player for the way they've defended this season. So I think it's slightly, again, by default, but I think Carlinhos just about edges it.
Again, yeah, I mean, these teams are down the wrong end of the table, so this should be a difficult decision. And, the Slovic one was nailed on, but, yeah, this one is, up for grabs. But, yeah, Carlinhos has taken it, and, Shonan is slightly up for grabs as well. We have not included their top scorer, Naoki Ishihara, in our shortlist, and Captain Takuya Okamoto also did not make it. So the three for Shonan that we've plumped for, and again, we could be slightly accused of a recency bias here, as Mitsuki Saito has made it for his 26 appearances and two goals. Both of those goals came in the previous two match days to the one on Saturday. So he was very much a late bloomer in terms of getting on the score sheet this season. Of course, his second goal was the goal of the season contender that made it into Sam's poll last week, and indeed ran Thomas Deng very close. But Saito is important, very important creatively for Shauna, no question, from out on the flank. Their midfield general, Daiki Kaneko, also makes our shortlist, as does goalkeeper Kosei Tani, who might have, he might have been my pick before. Well, he certainly didn't cover himself in glory trying to save that shot from Mateus on Saturday afternoon at the Toyota Stadium. But I don't suppose I should penalise him too much for failing to keep out a 35-yard laser beam. For Tani, he was kept on the bench for the first five games of the season, but has missed only one since. Before the weekend, he conceded only 29 goals in 21 games, and keeping five clean sheets in the process. Obviously, letting three into Grampus has inflated that figure quite a bit. But still, yeah, it's not the best defence in the world in front of Tani for Shonan. So he might just about still be my pick. But again, Sam, you see these every week. So does Kaneko or indeed Mitsuki Saito get your nod over the Shonan custodian?
It's a very difficult pick, this one, because Kaneko and Saito have been good for a couple of years. I mean, they're only 22 and 21, respectively, and Tani's only 20. But Tani, I think, has just been, as you say, didn't play the first five, and he's just grown as this season has gone on. And it looks like, well, he's on loan from Gamba Osaka, so they've got a very good goalkeeper to come back. The eventual, probably understudy to Higashiguchi should take over at Gamba and be their number one keeper for a few years. So I've really enjoyed watching Tani. I think he commands his area quite well for a 20-year-old, which is pretty incredible. And he's had like a hodgepodge of a defence in front of him. It's been rotated around through injuries and various who knows who's played in that back line all season. So I think Tani's probably at least definitely the most improved in this. I really like Daiki Kaneko. I think he goes under the radar in terms of he's never going to be a player that gets on the highlights, because he is the one player in that midfield. He does all the dirty work. He recovers the ball. He's also a very good playmaker from deep as well. He's never going to be the one necessarily to play the final pass. I don't think he's going to score many goals, but the work he does is so important to them. And Mitsuki Saito, I'll defend us. I don't think it's a recency bias thing. Obviously, it's a fantastic goal he scored, but he is probably the classiest player in this Shonan team. Yeah, on the ball, he's the one player that you think you look to, and he might create something. He might do something a little bit different. I'd be very surprised if Saito is still at Shonan next season. I think he should be playing at a higher level. I think Kaneko should be as well, and Tani will be once he goes back to Gamba. So this is a really difficult pick, because the other two teams, it's difficult to pick players that have played well, but I think these three have all played very well all season and just maybe been let down by those around them. So it's a difficult pick, but I'm going to go with you. I think just for the improvement that Tani has made, I'll give it to him because, yeah, it's a difficult place to be in goal for Shonan. He's, yeah, he's really took to that challenge very well.
All right then. So, yeah, we'll, there you go. We're two goalkeepers are picked from the first three clubs that we have awarded players of the season for. And, well, yeah, obviously a lot goes into, yeah, what sort of a defence they've they've had to, put up with in front of them for both Slovic and Tani there. So, yeah, the votes are in, and there are our first three clubs decided. Next week, we'll do three or four more as we work our way up the table. And Sam, we've got to ultimately put our heads together and decide who the player of the season for Kawasaki is. But yeah, we've still got a couple of weeks left before we get all the way up to top spot in the table and have to make that difficult decision. So. All right, yeah, great stuff. We'll, if you vehemently disagree with any of our picks, listeners, feel free to tweet at us or, yes, indeed, let us know in the comments either on Patreon or on the Podbean. So once again, yeah, Sendai, Jakub Slovic is their player of the season. Carlinhos for Shimizu S-Pulse and Kosei Tani, the goalkeeper from Shonan Bellmare. And we'll be back with more next week. Before that, then, of course, there's plenty of football to be played in J1 and also in the Asian Champions League. Firstly, let's just quickly look ahead to what's happening in J1 before we touch on the ACL. So this coming Wednesday, six games from match day 29 will be played with the clash of the top two. Of course, the standout fixture as Kawasaki host Gamba Osaka. And anything other than a Gamba away win will see Kawasaki celebrate the title in front of their home fans. Elsewhere, Cerezo Osaka visit Oita, Kashima host Kashiwa, Hiroshima head to the BMW Stadium to face Shonan, Yokohama FC host Shimizu, and Tosu host Sendai. Then the remaining six games from match day 30 will be played over the weekend. Kawasaki have the weekend off, most probably, to bask in their title glory. There are two games on Saturday and the other four on Sunday, with the Sunday clash between traditional rivals Kashima and Urawa, probably the pick of the fixtures. But before we get to the weekend, though, Sam, obviously the three ACL clubs will be in action over in Qatar. FC Tokyo are first cab off the rank for the J-League clubs. They will face Shanghai Shenhua of the Chinese Super League on Tuesday. Shanghai have already played two games over in Qatar. The first one, a 2-1 win over Australian side Perth Glory on the 18th. But then on the 21st, they suffered a 3-1 defeat to Ulsan of the K-League. So, I don't know if you've caught any highlights of those two Shanghai performances, but, what lies in store for FC Tokyo, do you think, on Tuesday?
Well, I was quite negative, I think, last week on Tokyo's chances. Well, and just the J-League teams in general. But I'm more confident now. Shanghai, the two games, I think, went as expected. I think Ulsan were much the better team in their last game. And really, Shanghai, they've got a lot of injuries. Their first-choice goalkeeper is out. So many of their key players going forward have had injuries. They may get back in time for the Tokyo game, but not, I don't think fitness is going to be great for any of them. So I think this is a real opportunity for Tokyo to play Shanghai back-to-back. I think they should look to get 3 points, and if 3 points in both of these games, and that would put them onto 10. I think they'd be all but through if they do that. So I think, yeah, it's a real chance for Tokyo, and I'd be disappointed if I was Tokyo and I didn't get at least a win and a draw out of these, and probably two wins. I think Shanghai really are there for the taking. They're the weakest of the Chinese teams in this competition.
All right then. So yeah, Tokyo will play a doubleheader against Shanghai, and then they'll also play the return match against Ulsan. Of course, the first match between those sides way back in February ended in a 1-1 draw over in South Korea. So yeah, Tokyo will play three games by the time we congregate again for our next episode, Sam. So by that time, we should definitely know their status in terms of qualifying for the last 16 or not. Unfortunately for Vissel Kobe and the competition as a whole, Malaysian team JDT was forced to withdraw from the competition, and they weren't able to get over to Qatar due to government regulations. So that has caused a bit of a headache for the competition as a whole, but also it's greatly inconvenienced Vissel Kobe, Sam, because their 5-1 win in the opening match of the group stage has now been voided and taken away from them.
Yeah, it hasn't worked out for Kobe because, that win has gone for them. And Suwon, probably one of their key rivals for this top two, you'd say Guangzhou are probably the strongest team in the group, but Suwon had lost to the Malaysian side JDT, so they've got that loss taken off them. So that's a little bit of a good fortune for them. I think it was good for, there was a draw, wasn't it, between Guangzhou and Suwon, which I think is a decent result for Kobe. It leaves them top of the group on their own. They've got Guangzhou in their first game. It's a very difficult game, but I think if they win that, they've put themselves in a really good position. But I think it's harsh on Kobe to have gone from 6 to 3 points through no fault of their own. That it makes qualification a little bit more difficult, but I haven't seen much from Suwon that to really think that they are as good as Kobe can be, but you just don't know what Kobe team is going to come up. They have been looking at this ACL for, it seems like, the last 2 months they've been preparing, so hopefully that preparation pays off and they can hit the ground running when they play on Wednesday.
Yes, indeed. So, it's a double header as well for Kobe against Chinese opposition, Guangzhou Evergrande, as Sam has mentioned, on Wednesday. And then on the 28th, before they have a break on the 1st of December as the JDT have withdrawn before they play their final group match against Suwon on the 4th of December. Yokohama F. Marinos are involved in what was labelled the group of death, and there will also be an action for the first time in Qatar on Wednesday when they play Shanghai SIPG in the first of their doubleheader. SIPG got off to a winning start in Qatar, winning both of their games 2-1 over Sydney FC and also Jeonbuk of South Korea. That's a huge result in that potentially crunch clash, and that has taken SIPG on to 6 points, the same as F. Marinos. So these two teams, Sam, have a big advantage now over both Jeonbuk and Sydney FC, who have both played a game more. So, whichever team comes out on top in these two back-to-back games will certainly seal a qualification through to the round of 16. There should be two absolutely fascinating clashes coming up in the next week.
Yeah, should be a really great game. Shanghai, they're the team I always enjoy watching the most from China. I think they are a little bit devious as well sometimes when they can see out a game, definitely, and they were kind of doing that against Jeonbuk. I thought the results were perfect for Marinos to get Jeonbuk especially, and Sydney are a good team in their own right. Get them both onto 1 point, get that 5-point buffer with they've got a game in hand now. I think if they win one of, even if the two teams share victories and both win one, I think that'd be perfect for both of those sides. It doesn't really matter, I don't think, whether you finish first or second in this. It's all about getting through, because when you get to the next round, they're all good teams. I don't think finishing first is necessarily a massive advantage. So I think Yokohama will fancy their chances, because Shanghai can be got at. They have terrific players. When you look at Hulk, when you look at Oscar, when you look at Aaron Moy, very good players for this level. But there are areas in that Shanghai team where they can be got at. I think Yokohama will believe that they have the players themselves to cause problems. I think it's a fascinating couple of games. And this is really where the Champions League is terrifically exciting, when there are very evenly matched teams, and especially when you get the better teams playing each other, and Marinos and Shanghai SIPG would class as that, and Jeonbuk would as well. They're always good games. I fancy Yokohama to at least get one victory in that, and that'll put them right on the brink of qualification.
Terrific stuff. All right, so, yeah, so much to come in the next week. And, well, Sam, where are your attentions going to be? Obviously, we've got, yeah, almost a full round of J1 on Wednesday, but then also, yeah, two ACL games on roughly the same time. So how many screens are you going to have going? And, yeah, what's your priority? Are you going to be able to watch your Frontale most likely seal the title, or do you have to be on ACL duty at the same time?
I've got multiple plates spinning at the same time, right. So I'll have the Kawasaki Gamba game will be on. I know that Free Sports over here are covering the Kashima Kashiwa game, so that'll be on the telly. I'll have to get an ACL screen up somewhere. The rest of the games might have to take a bit of a back seat, I'm afraid. They might have to be pushed to the side, but I think all the key games I should be able to cover, and thankfully Yokohama and Shanghai are kicking off afterwards, so I've got a bit of dessert after the feast of the J-League earlier on.
Absolutely. That was exactly the word I was going to use, Sam. Yeah, feast of football to come. And, it's coming thick and fast, chunky and rapid. But, in this crazy season, I guess we wouldn't have it any other way. So, all right, mate. Well, yeah, we'll leave it there for this week. Another bumper episode of the pod. And great to get our Players of the Season series off to a rip-roaring start. So, great to catch up with you, as always. Yeah, take it easy this week. You're going to be flat out, but try and enjoy it all. And hopefully, if you don't drop dead, we'll congregate again next week.
Yeah, absolutely. We can come and answer all the criticism that we get for our picks from the best player of these teams. So tin hats at the ready. But hopefully, people might agree or at least give us an easy ride this week.
Yes, they were pretty slim pickings from the bottom three clubs, weren't they? But, all right. So we'll leave it there for this week. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our supporters on Patreon for their ongoing support, and, of course, you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up a busy week in J1 and the ACL. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.